Welcome to The Current, a podcast produced by We Stand for Energy. We Stand for Energy is a community that supports a reliable, affordable, and sustainable energy future for everyone, and is a project of EEI, the National Trade Association representing U.S. investor-owned electric companies. My name is Brad Viator, Vice President of External Affairs at EEI, and I am your host.
Welcome back, everyone. We're going to have a conversation on a topic that I feel like a lot of people have heard about, but maybe don't have a lot of depth on. And that topic is just transition. I feel like it's one of those buzzy phrases here in the energy world and in the policy world a bit more broadly. I've invited an expert in energy policy and just transition. I've got Mallory Huggins, who's a senior project director at the Keystone Policy Center. Welcome, Mallory.
Thank you for having me. Excited to talk about this.
All right. So before you explain what Just Transition is, I need you to explain what the Keystone Policy Center is. So can you tell me a little bit about your organization and then your broad book of work over there?
Sure. So Keystone Policy Center was founded in 1975 to bring diverse voices together, find common higher ground on complex policy issues. We work across a number of different issue areas, energy, obviously, but also public lands, education, health, agriculture, emerging genetic technologies, and tribal engagement. We are headquartered in Keystone, Colorado, hence the name. When I talk to energy people, I often joke that we, as Keystone, have no affiliation with the pipeline, just the Colorado mountain town. So my pre-Keystone background was in the electric regulatory space. I was at FERC and NERC before Keystone. At Keystone, I still do a lot of that energy work, but also climate, public land, occasionally some of the emerging technology policy work we do, often looking at how those topics intersect with equity and environmental issues. As with other Keystone projects, my work and Keystone's work just in general ranges. It looks really different depending on what we're working on. So sometimes it's facilitating one-off meetings. Sometimes it's soliciting community or stakeholder feedback on different topics or issues. Sometimes it's facilitating coalitions over a number of years. But we're always at the center as an independent non-advocacy organization trying to bring folks together.
Great. I'll say that we certainly love our partnership and opportunity to work with our friends at Keystone. It's cool. You'll bring together a good coalition of folks. Yeah. Gentlemen from there, explain what on earth Just Transition is.
Yeah, it's an important question. I was just at a conference yesterday where this question was asked and everyone was sort of like quiet for a second because I think folks have a lot of different definitions of this, but I'll share some of my thoughts and other ways I've heard it defined and described. So when I think of just transitions, I think about economic transitions in communities that are dependent on the coal industry. I think that definition is starting to expand a bit, but for the work that we've done, at least, it's been focused on coal-dependent communities. And I think, as probably most people listening would know at this point, market forces, aging infrastructure and climate goals and other forces are leading to closures of coal plants and mines all across the country and often many years sooner than originally planned. And so folks who work on just transitions are thinking about how to ensure that communities and workers are supported through those transitions. When I think about just transitions, I think about the micro level and also the macro level. On the micro level, the community level, some of the questions or considerations are around what's the impact that a plant or mine closure will have on the local community in terms of tax base and infrastructure and just the people in the community. How will workers be impacted? Because that might look different than other folks in the community. What does remediation look like? Things like that. And then at the more macro level, I think there's that lens you can take on just transitions. And from that perspective, we know that burning fossil fuels contributes to climate change, and there's a lot of things we need to do to change our energy system to reduce emissions from the energy sector. But how do we mitigate these climate impacts, which we know disproportionately impact people of color and low-income folks? How can we mitigate those impacts without doing so on the backs of communities that have been dependent on coal and without serious impact to ratepayers? Speaking of ratepayers, I guess at this conference that I was at yesterday, a friend of Keystone, Dave Springy, who's the executive director of NASUCA, which represents state consumer advocates, talked about how one way to think about just transition is as a process and making sure that the right voices are invited to participate in decisions about how and when some of these facilities close and who gets a voice in what happens next. And I like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, thinking about the challenge, and I'll dig in a little bit further from here, but thinking about the challenge, we have a system that was set up, decisions that were made generations ago, essentially, to go out and produce energy equitably. And towns were built around it, right? Like the country songs talking about coal camps in Kentucky, like, are around for a reason. Like, that's, you know, that was the company town at the time, right? So it's like a particular challenge. Like, as focused as we all may be on eliminating carbon, there are certainly people that have been dependent upon this resource for forever, and towns and cities and schools and everything else were built around it. And you can't just snap your fingers and walk away from it, right? And the people that are going to be impacted most are the ones that were probably impacted most at the beginning. Like, they're the ones that are working at the coal mines and have the sort of like family members that maybe face some of the trials and tribulations of that. When you really sort of think about the problem, I think you quickly come to the conclusion that there's certainly a role for people to step in here and figure out, okay, how do we make this transition work in a way that allows people to have the opportunity to flourish and appropriately recover?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think in these conversations, it's so important to recognize that, like, those communities hopefully thrived in some ways and did well from the presence of that industry and those jobs. But also, now that they're dealing with an impending transition, we should have some sort of gratitude and recognition for the fact that that work and those decades powered the country. And that's a big deal. And I think, just in reflecting on this topic earlier, I feel like it's slightly different than when any other kind of industry closes in a place. Keystone's done some work on hospital closures in a community or military base closure, and those have some similar impact, but it's not quite as swept up in this, like, massive national policy goal or state or regional policy goal that might be driving decisions that are based on more than just an individual company's decision. And I think that's what makes it a little more complicated.
Yeah, totally. I'll speak from the perspective of my members, where it's like, look, they either acquired these assets or built these assets a really long time ago, and they made a commitment to that community. And now other factors are saying that the commitment which you made for that community and all those employees there, like, that's not something that's viable anymore. And so how do you navigate that, wanting to keep your commitment to the community one way or another, but also appreciating that, like, that asset that you've had maybe doesn't have the life you planned it to have?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So you've got kind of a cool partner on this that you've been working with, the Just Transition Fund. Can you tell us a little bit about the Just Transition Fund and what your partnership looks like?
Yes, I can. The Just Transition Fund is an organization that works to create economic opportunity for frontline communities and workers who are hit hardest by the transition away from coal. So they do this work on a day in, day out basis. And we had the founder of the Just Transition Fund, Heidi Binko, come speak at a forum I direct called the Energy Board that EDI participates in, some of your members as well. And that started our relationship with them. And after we had Heidi at one of our events, in talking more with her and through dialogue with some of our Energy Board members, including EEI, we realized that there was an opportunity to bring utilities together on this topic of just transitions, and in particular on some of the things you just mentioned. What is the role of a utility in a transition like this in a community? What are some best practices and lessons learned from those transitions? And what obligations does the utility have to a community that's been hosting a coal plant that's now closing? In the summer of 2019, we brought together about 15 utility participants to talk about and collaborate with their peers on some of those best practices for engaging with communities and other stakeholder groups during these coal plant closures. And so we had folks in DC for a couple of days, and we had some case studies from some of the utilities. We had reflections from stakeholders, environmental groups, but also folks from communities, leaders of different communities that have gone through these transitions. And of course, we had a lot of discussion among the group. I can share a little bit about what we talked about if that's helpful too.
Yeah, I think it is. That was a little bit like what the conclusions were, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about one of the, I think, conclusions that always comes up in just transition conversations is that there is no simple answer. There's no silver bullet. But some of the topics we discussed were the timing of closure announcements, how to do that in the best way. What does it look like to communicate with employees? We talked actually a good amount about public education on the grid in general, which I think is helpful broadly, but also with communities that might be going through a transition like this. We talked about the loss of the tax base and addressing the loss of the tax base. Almost all of the definitions of just transition from that meeting and all of the outside stakeholder groups we brought in referenced the importance of getting to an end state where that tax base that a coal plant may have heavily contributed to that's retained through this process to the extent possible. We talked about the relationship between the utility and the community, and that's going to vary a ton depending on the utility type and the community itself. We also talked about the degree to which there can be lessons learned from other industries. I mentioned earlier that a single hospital or military base closing might have some similarities, but a lot of differences. But folks brought up major transitions like in the Pacific Northwest, like the timber industry slowly reducing in size and whether that might be a good sort of case study. And then we also talked some about federal funds and how folks access those to support them through those transitions.
That's kind of always been the thing that struck me about this. You're talking about a community that is losing sort of like major job center and a major taxpayer. So to me at core, this thing is like, there's a lot of money that's leaving that town. And for those listeners that are maybe not as attuned to how the electric system works, I mean, practically speaking, these generating facilities, particularly coal facilities, nuclear facilities are the same. They're not in city centers. They're in a lot of rural communities and they're connected with high voltage transmission. So these entire towns are built around the 400, 500, 600 jobs that exist at that coal plant. Then that disappears. And it's like an opportunity for the town to figure out how they're going to reinvent themselves. But assuming that the 600 people will be taken care of from a job perspective, but you know, the diner that was dependent upon all the people that were working at that coal plant, like, what does that look like? So like when y'all dig into these questions about this capital stack, a Just Transition Fund obviously has some money. Y'all are just trying to think about the problem and figure out what other partners may look like. Like what are the groups and organizations that are coming to mind that can help to fill those gaps?
Well, could I talk a little bit about some of the work we've done in Colorado, because and then draw out, I've liked the work he's done on Just Transitions because we looked at both sides, like what's the utility's role and or obligation with a community, and then also what should a community do to organize and prepare for a transition like this. Not too long after we held that convening in 2019, we got involved and we were brought in to lead community engagement for the state of Colorado, which had just created a Just Transition office. And I believe that was the first of its kind in the country. And our role in that was to do direct community outreach with roundtables and specific stakeholder groups, and then town halls with the broader community in all of the communities in Colorado that were impacted by coal plant or mine closures. And that work started in Northwest Colorado, mainly in Rout and Moffett counties. And in early 2020, we did two town halls and six roundtable discussions that hundreds of people attended. And we had a number of different state officials there to engage with and listen to the community and better understand their needs. So that's part of the answer to your question. I think when it comes to who's a player in this, it's the general community, just everyone who lives in the community that has an interest in it. It's state officials that are going to be in some ways, hopefully shepherding these transitions in a way that doesn't do harm to the communities. It's local leaders, it's local economic development organizations, local businesses. It's of course the folks who work for the utilities that are involved. And through that process, we try to engage all of those folks. And I think it was a really good model and a good start, but we were at that very first set of meetings that we did. This was March of 2020, and the governor of Colorado, Governor Polis, was in attendance. And while we were at that meeting, he got his first call that Colorado had its first case of coronavirus. And so our community engagement work wound down from there because the state had a more acute public health crisis on its hands. But from there, we stayed engaged in that Northwest Colorado community. And I'll say a little bit more about that just because I think it's a good example of how at least one community is approaching some of these issues. One of my colleagues, Callie King, worked with El Pomar Foundation's Northwest Regional Council, and they worked on a roadmap for Moffett County that was focused on leveraging existing assets and other opportunities to diversify their economy in the wake of some closures. So we did some of that work. And now, a year or two later, I have colleagues who are working in that same region to try, now that they have this roadmap and they have some of these ideas, how can they build the capacity of this community and leaders in the region to access some of the federal opportunities and funding that could really enable this transition. And I think that's a model that could be valuable. I want to flag too, just in terms of who are some of the players in the groups like the Just Transition Fund. Like I said at the beginning, they're doing this work day in and day out, and they support communities with technical assistance and also with grants. And there are also a number of place-based or policy-focused organizations that are more laser-focused on just transitions. And there's a group that I'm a part of called the Just and Equitable Transition Coalition, and they meet weekly to talk about what their various states are doing. This is focused on the West. So I just wanted to mention those couple of groups to emphasize the need for all of this work. It's such a complex issue, and every transition is different, and it's going to take a lot of funds and corporate engagement and stakeholder involvement and collaboration to do it right.
So what are those funding opportunities, maybe at the federal level and other resources? Where do communities go to start to sort some of that out?
What I've heard from folks who are more on the ground is like exciting that there's a lot of resources getting pushed out there, but figuring out how to access them and do that in an effective way is a little bit overwhelming. There are a number of different resources that sort of aggregate everything that's out there. So Just Transition Fund has one of them. They, I mentioned, provide their own grants, and they also have programs that support organizations that are applying for federal grants. So they do some of that work. They have a document that outlines all those opportunities. There are other organizations that have captured what's in the bipartisan infrastructure bill and what from that connects back to Just Transitions. I could share some links. Blue Green Alliance has a roundup, a user guide to the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and the National Caucus of Environmental Legislators has one too. And then, I mean, the federal government is doing a lot to look at these issues, and actually we're recording over workshops that DOE is putting on to explore strategies for some of these communities and how to repurpose legacy fossil fuel infrastructure. That's happening right now. And then last year, President Biden created an interagency working group on coal and power plant communities and economic revitalization. That working group also has a list of funding opportunities that cover everything from some of the planning that's going to need to be done, economic development in general. Obviously, there's a ton of things connected to infrastructure. I think there's direct worker support and also things related to remediation and public health impacts associated with some of these communities.
So if you're one of those communities, let's take a state you know a lot about, Colorado. If you're a community in Colorado that's looking at a closure and advising the city council or whatever it may be, the county commission, on what to do and where to start, where would you tell those people to go? And like, how would you guide the beginning of those types of discussions?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And Colorado is a unique example in that I probably would start them with the Just Transition office. It was initially a one-person show. Wade Buchanan runs that office and has gotten a few additional staff members at this point. I think in a state like Colorado, that's a great place to start. And then to just continue to go back to the Just Transition Fund, but they have great resources for communities when it comes to where to start. They also do a good job bringing together different community leaders to try to sort some things out and make their plans. The National Association of County Officials has also provided support and kind of forums for collaboration among different communities that are trying to make plans for those transitions and given them, again, both technical support and then opportunities to collaborate with others that are in the same boat. I don't know if it's helpful. I can share. I was thinking about what's happened in Northwest Colorado, which has gotten a ton of attention and resources. They've had a lot of work going on there. And I think there are some good best practices there that I can talk about a little bit too.
I'll say two things. One, love to get some of those notes because I think we do post after action and I think it's good to have resource pages there. And then two, I'd also like to hear about some of those innovative solutions.
I was just reflecting on this in preparation. Some of the things I'll say come out of the work we've done in Colorado with the direct community engagement, but were also things that were reflected in the utility convening we had and some of the documents that the interagency working group that I referenced have already produced. And I think there's a couple themes. I think transparency and starting early is one. Collaborative planning and stakeholder engagement is a big one. Diversity of solutions and then capacity for implementation. Any good approach to address transition in a community needs to start with transparency and kind of getting ahead of the challenge. And that's not something a community can control on its own, but I think it's something that utilities and local leaders can work with communities on and make sure they're honest and upfront about what those job losses will look like, what the time frame is, how the tax base will be impacted, things like that. So I think that's huge to just get in front of it to the extent possible. But there's a balance there that we've heard in some of our work about not doing it so far in advance that it induces panic without there being any real action to take yet. So it's a bit of a balance. And of course, I'll say this as keystone, but I do think the collaborative planning and stakeholder engagement is really huge in these communities. getting folks together to talk about what their opportunities are, getting buy-in from local leaders. And I already said this, there's no silver bullet. And I think in probably no case is there another industry that's going to come in and just replace all of those jobs one for one, and they're going to be just as well paying and just as attractive of skilled labor jobs. But what we've heard from some of the folks we've worked with is this idea that building out sort of a more diverse economic base for a community could be more helpful down the road to ensure that the same kind of transition doesn't happen again. So in a place like Craig, Colorado, for instance, I mean, they've looked at a number of things, but they've talked about outdoor recreation, which a lot of these communities talk about, but that's the single answer, but it could be part of a solution. Craig has talked about the importance of infrastructure, both for current residents to continue to make this a great place to live, but also to attract new residents now that work is a lot more flexible and folks can remotely work from that part of the state. They've also talked about opportunities for remediation or repurposing of some of those assets, the transmission lines and the facility itself. It's a lot of work, but I think that diversity of solutions helps. And then I think having someone from either within or outside the community that can drive the conversations, even more importantly, who can implement them. There's communities we've talked to that have this plan and have these great ideas, but unless there's someone whose job it is to make that happen, it's just going to sit on a shelf. So there need to be people within these communities who can implement some of those ideas, and there need to be resources available to make that happen.
Like, what does that look like? Who are those people that are like the drivers?
In, I want to get the organization names right, but it's in at least Northwest Colorado, it was the economic development person at the county level who led that. And I don't know that that's going to be the same everywhere, but I think that's a position that's sort of logical. And then again, to just continue to return to the Northwest Colorado example, they also have this sort of this council of counties from that broader region that work together. And so I think a group like that can help drive it too. But there's also the county commissioners. They have been super active in the process as we've done, and leaders at this hyper-local level too, mayors and city officials.
It seems like it requires just a bunch of coordination, right? There's the first step, I guess, is like recognition, acknowledgement that this thing is happening and we got to figure out what to do. And then it's find the people who are in position and are legitimate stakeholders to sit in there and say, all right, we're going to bootstrap this thing and figure it out. There are resources out there. There's a lot to sift through, but you know, we got to get to work because we don't really have an alternative, right?
I think that's right.
What else? Utility folks in the energy industry be thinking about as they think about just transition, like what matters?
One thought I have is that just since we started doing this work in 2019, I feel like the landscape has changed a ton. And I guess in some ways that's daunting. I think it's partly changed because these kinds of transitions are happening in more and more places. But the issue's gotten a lot more attention from the federal government. I think there's more and more resources out there, both for communities and utilities, to do this right. And I think the more these transitions happen, the more best practices and guidance utilities can give one another. I know one thing we've talked about with some of your colleagues at EEI is whether we want to do another version of the utility convening we did back in 2019, now that it is a just totally different landscape with more to offer and hopefully provide something that's a little more resource-based for all of your members to work through this. There are some great examples out there, and some of your members are really doing a great job working within their communities to do this right.
For my two cents on that, having been a part of that conversation, I do think we should do it again because more resources are coming to the table. And you have particular offices, I think, what is it, like Department of Commerce, that has a big funding mechanism that I think it would be a good conversation to connect some dots and figure out partnerships we could pull together out of that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the other message for utilities is it's not squarely on the shoulders of utilities to manage this transition. Obviously, the community is an important player and local leaders are too. And it's not always a unilateral decision from a utility to close something, but they can play a really important role. And I think there are ways to do it right. And we should elevate those to the extent possible.
Yep, I think you're right. Well, Mallory, good luck. Happy to help in any way that we can. I think you're doing pretty important work here, and we want to be supportive and start to figure out how to solve more and more of these problems.
Likewise, hope we can figure out some ways to work together on it.
We hope you found this to be an informative 15 minutes, and we look forward to bringing you additional expert insights on energy policy. To learn more about EEI and the electric power industry, visit www.eei.org. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts by searching for The Current and We Stand for Energy.